Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland's Inflammatory Bowel Disease Program, a multidisciplinary care service dedicated to relieving symptoms and improving the quality of life for IBD patients. For more information, 1-800-492-5538. Folks, welcome. Good to all have you all in the studio. I am here in our studio. Anthony and I are here in studio with Ann McCarthy, Associate Dean for Johns Hopkins Carey Business School. Brian Griffiths, who is contributing editor of Red Maryland. Every time I say that, I have to tell him it's not a communist journal. Diedrich Mohammed, who is co-founder of the Race and Economic Policy Forum and senior organizer and research associate for the Program on Inequality and the Common Good at the Institute for Policy Studies.
Thanks for having me.
Who was there this weekend.
Yes.
And walked through
all the events.
Oh.
And we are joined on the phone by Dr. Lester Spence, professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University, who's giving me a complex. He's always on the phone and never in the studio anymore.
I don't think he likes you anymore, Mark.
Is that what it is, Lester?
I like you.
Lester's not even there yet.
You've never taken your call.
Yeah.
This is bad.
This is not good. He is giving me a complex. The number here is 410-319-8888. And part of the, you know, we started thinking about, do we do a show before this rally on Saturday or not do a show before this rally on Saturday? And there were many people who had written about it. Let me just give this little preface, and we can just throw some questions and ideas. I'd like to hear what you think as well, if they need a little preface to all this as well. A lot of people were very upset that he would have a rally on the 47th anniversary of Martin Luther King's March on Washington. That was sacrilege to that day, many people argued. Others would argue that that he had every right to make his march any day he wanted to in this United States of America and run a march any day of the week, and that other people have been arguing that this march was when you look at liberal press and some left press, a lot of press ignored the march. Which is what I find mainstream media always being accused of in terms of ignoring what happens on the left. It felt like it was happening in many ways this way. But I thought that we talked a bit about it before we went on the air in another meeting that Diedrich and I had earlier today on another matter. And I said to him, I think that people who are progressive, liberal, or on the left, however you want to describe yourself, whoever you are, that ignoring this march is at their own peril, because it represents something in this country that's bubbling up from all sides. And I think that there is a divide in this country. And one of the reasons that we want to have this conversation is to talk about what this divide is in America that seems to be getting deeper, and that it's people are becoming disenchanted across the country on all kinds of levels. And so we want to kind of bear into some of that conversation today and talk about what we think. Happened on Saturday and what we think that all represented. I don't know, Anthony, if you want to weigh in here a little bit real fast before we open this to our guests.
I think that, Mark, I watched a lot of the coverage. I watched a lot of the replaying of Sarah Palin's address. I watched, of course, Glenn Beck's remarks. And I think that several things struck me, and I was fascinated. And I'm always fascinated to hear what they're saying on the right and the far left, because I do believe that as we get deeper into the Obama presidency, that this cultural divide in America seems to be growing deeper and deeper, and people are drawing deeper lines in the sands about where they stand and why they're standing on whatever side they're standing on. The focus on Christianity at this rally, march, whatever Glenn Beck pulled together was fascinating to me. There was an absolute dismissal of any other faith at this rally. There were so many times the mention of this being a Christian nation, getting back to Christian roots. And I think that was subtle, but it was really geared to feeding red meat to people who have problem with Muslims in this country. And I think so many times these speakers, Mark, fed into stereotypes about the far right. But having said that, I was absolutely blown away and impressed with Glenn Beck's call to Americans and the answer. Whether it was 100,000 or 500,000, there were a lot of people who came in this great country that we have where we express ourselves. They came out and expressed themselves. I was blown away by his call and the answer from Americans. But I think, Mark, it is deeper. And the mainstream press did ignore it. I mean, most of the mainstream news did not, or they made subtle mention deep into their programs about the rally. And I think that's intentional. Glenn Beck is a media personality. I don't think they wanted to give much attention to an event that was being hosted by and a call from a media personality, especially for Fox News. But I think it goes so deep. When you listen to those speakers, when you listen to Sarah Palin, when you look at that crowd, that crowd had to be 99.9% white. And I think that the message that was sent was clear, and who the message was going to was very clear. And I don't want to call it a dangerous thing. I think it is a great thing in America when people express themselves. But that it really does open a great discussion on who stands on what side of this cultural divide.
Well, from the point of the mainstream media, it was almost the rally that wasn't.
That's right.
Seriously.
You're right.
Mm-hmm. It was the rally that didn't happen.
Well, I guess
which I found interesting.
My question is that, I mean, Fox News is mainstream media. I mean, it's one of the largest media networks in the country. So
I don't think that makes it mainstream, though.
Well,
I think that they're clear if
much of America is watching it. I don't know what
but
would
I think
make
that,
it not mainstream.
I think that they're clear and honest bias towards progressive and liberal news. And they're honest about that. It places them clearly out of the mainstream.
Okay.
When you're only promoting a certain political ideology, you are not in the mainstream. And I would say the same thing about CBS. I think that to call CBS mainstream would be kind of probably pushing the envelope.
Well, but at the same time, I mean, you have to look at it from the perspective of, you know, and I think Anthony started to make a good point. What is mainstream news? And if you still consider the three major broadcast networks as mainstream news, clearly you have to consider Fox and CNN as mainstream news as well. Now, do I think that all those other news organizations also have an inherent bias? Yes, not necessarily as forwardly advertised as the bias that Fox has, but you know, Fox is the most watched news organization in the country, and just by that very definition, that makes it a mainstream entity for whatever that means.
Yeah, right. let me hold that for a minute. DJ, why don't you finish what you were saying in the beginning?
Well, you know, I mean, going to the rally, it was very interesting to see. I mean, I got the impression, I don't know this for a fact, but that most, this is just an impression, of the people there were demonstrating, or it wasn't a demonstration, it was like a rally for the first time, you know, and that's an interesting piece because it really
that
was an evangelical type call for people to come together around this Christian theme. And, you know, I didn't get a chance to hear all the time when you go to a demonstration, you never hear the speeches as well as if you're watching it or reading it. And I couldn't even really find Beck's speech on the internet. I just heard pieces of it while I was there. But I think Beck has created a very interesting space for himself in the Fox News network because he really is, to my knowledge, the only one who has such a clear kind of religious identity, a religious identity with a lot of tensions. Because when I look at his website, there's constantly evangelical Christians critiquing Beck for not being a true Christian because he's Mormon. And Beck recognizes that. So there's a tension there. But the language he uses is very a very Christian and evangelical. We must save the country, restore the honor of the country. It's kind of a fascinating piece. I'm not really sure where it's going, but it definitely spoke to a significant element of the country.
And the other thing, Mark, before we turn to our other guests, Diedrich and I and you were talking about in the green room before the show began, I found it as fascinating the counter rally was so amazingly, overwhelmingly, almost exclusively African-American. And that Al Sharpton, in a very short period of time, put out a call, got about 20,000 people to show up, but they were almost all African-Americans. And that's what I mean about this divide becoming very clear in the minds of those of us who get paid to talk about it, those get paid to study it, and try to figure out, is there a deeper meaning than just, you know, we disagree with Obama's health care plan. We disagree with Obama's saving a stimulus package. There is something much deeper and emotional happening. And it was even when they interviewed some of the people at the Beck rally. They despise, hate, and loathe everything that they believe Barack Obama represents. And they believe it to be very anti-Christian. And I find it absolutely fascinating that this president, unlike the previous president and even Bill Clinton, has become an absolute lightning rod that may cost his party this midterm elections and his second term presidency.
Before you go on there, Lester Spence has joined us. I guess he's still liking Lester. I'm just messing with you, man. We were teasing later earlier, saying that I thought maybe Lester Spence had said, "I don't want to be on the Steiner show anymore."
I cuss, but I'm on the radio.
Welcome, Lester.
What's up?
You've heard a bit of the talk. Your comments.
I think that it's interesting because on one level, I read an interesting argument in Slate magazine. I think the author is William. It's the spelling is S-A-L-E-T-A-N, I believe. Salatin or Salatan or something. And he was basically arguing that one of the things that's happening with Beck's March is that Martin Luther King, it signals a victory in some ways of the civil rights movement, that there's a certain reading of King that everybody now just kind of takes for granted and conservatives argue for, and they're not doing it tongue-in-cheek and they're not doing it to pull a little wool over people's eyes. They really believe in it, right? The challenge is that reading of King is really narrow, and what we have to do is actually expand that. And where the problem for Obama is not just that perhaps he has to contend with this really narrow reading of what Christianity is that he has, as of yet, not generated a forceful enough alternative that not just points to the importance of government, but connects that to a larger Christian narrative that he actually does believe in.
Well, let me ask a question that you might think is partisan. I hope it doesn't come off that way, but it's a question I think that I really got that I think needs to be addressed and addressed honestly if we can do it. And it's a very hard one to address, which is, all right, in this last election, a lot of things went on, but let me just focus on one. I can talk about the middle, which I'll do in a little while, and then the progressive activist community to help put Obama over, and this large middle of white voters that ended up voting for Barack Obama that also helped put him over to the top. I'll come to that. But one of the things that is overwhelmingly true is that 57% of Americans who are white voted against Barack Obama and see themselves as conservative or more conservative than liberal in this country. And that the majority of this movement, we see like on this march were white. Mm-hmm. And the only black folks really saw at this march were a few on the stage that spoke to the crowd. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things been written about parts of America who are very upset about where the future of this country is going, the demographic and the physical change, the racial change that's going on in America today. That's thrown in here somehow. And that somehow, and this is not saying conservatives or racist or a racist ideology. Be very clear, I'm not saying that even close to that. But something is going on where the worlds of race, the history of race in America, touch conservative versus liberal or progressive, that is a lightning rod. And people are afraid to talk about that lightning rod, but afraid to address it openly, that something is there, and it's very fundamental and deep. And I just want to ask this group of people here who represent left and moderately conservative and more conservative views in this room about what that means to you all and how you wrestle with that question, if you do. Let me, Diedrich.
I will since you framed it that way, it really does seem in many ways that this rally was an identity politic rally, in that it's an identity of white Christian evangelical people who I don't know are super, like, I don't consider them like a Rush Limbaugh type of right wing, where they're just really into politics and partisan politics and these types of things, but really into feeling a loss that the country's going in a wrong direction, that I am no longer validated, my values are no longer validated, and we have to restore the honor of the country, which means going backward in time, right? They're wearing shirts of pictures of George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and I think Benjamin Franklin, you know, and I don't think they, and to them that's almost pure, you know. Like, to me, I'm just like, well, that's two slave masters and Benjamin Franklin, and that's honor. Like, no, that doesn't make sense to me. But I mean, walking through the crowd, the people are very gracious, very polite, just like kind of, you know, nice, generally church family people, you know. But again, I think it's really an identity politic, because Glenn Beck, I just want to go off for a second. Glenn Beck's a very controversial figure on the conservative side. I mean, I was listening to Sean Hannity on Friday. He was really dismissing the rally, saying we need Tea Party movements that's not based around building up a charismatic figure, but it's based on putting forward politics. Bill O'Reilly was saying there's no way you'll get 100,000 people. So, I mean, it wasn't just liberal press who was kind of dismissing it. A lot of, because Glenn Beck, I think, is kind of crazy. I don't mean that in a super negative way, but I do think he is kind of a little crazy and caught up in his own message, and it puts off a lot of people. But there's a lot of America who can really, people mocked that he wasn't going to write his speech. He was going to let the spirit talk to him. Keith Olbermann's making fun of Beck hearing voices in his head. But for parts of America, the spirit speaking to you is very important, and it's not something to be laughed at. It's something they appreciate. So I think there really is a core identity, because there is no political, clear political vision at that march, right? It was kind of, I think there is, Beck has a clear political position, and he'll pull it out later on. But that march really kept a basic kind of evangelical identity of individual salvation and restoring honor. And we'll get the politics of it later.
The Glenn Beck and the Tea Party movement, the rally, I mean, it was all – this is not something that just happened last week. This is a manifestation of something that we've seen building, not just during the Obama administration. This goes back to the Ron Paul presidential campaign, and this goes back long before that. A manifestation of people who are fed up with big government regardless of the party stripe, fed up with high taxes, and just want to be generally left alone. And it's that continuing buildup of the domestic spending and the deficit spending of the Bush years, the continued deficit spending of the Obama years, that is really, they're really driving people up the wall. And this is not a manifestation that is based on race or party or color or creed. It has everything to do with spending and the size of government and being fed up with what they're seeing out of Washington. The number of people who were at that rally that would have attended such a rally 6 months, a year, 2 years ago is a very low number. And I'm seeing that out in the field working with Republican candidates and Republican activists. There are people who said, I would not have given any mind to participating in this if it wasn't for the fact that I'm fed up. And I think that's the manifestation that we're seeing.
But I would say it's a little different, though, than the straight Tea Party crowd deficit, because I didn't get that. I've been to a Tea Party event, and you see people really passionate about that issue. The passion seemed much more to me about honor, virtue, Christ, which is different than really getting caught up on, you know, being a deficit hawk. Like, I do think there's a distinction between a regular Tea Party event and what Glenn Beck pulled off.
Well, you know, there are a number of ironies here.
Let Ann speak, and then I'll jump in. Let's go to Ann.
I was going to say,
Go ahead.
There are a number, I think, ironies here. First of all, Mormons are considered a cult by traditional Christians. So for Glenn Beck, a Mormon, to have a evangelical Christian event in and of itself is like a non-starter. I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
But it's real.
Now, I'd like to be the history person in the room and go back to Lee Atwater, because the Republicans made a deal with the Southern Democrats, Christian evangelical Democrats, to come over and be Reagan Republicans. And that was Lee Atwater's strategy. And at the heart of that strategy, as much as I hate to admit it, there was race. And they tapped into the Republican Party, made that sort of like what I would call agreement with the devil to get the votes and those Southern Reagan Republican or Democrats to come over and vote. And ever since then, there's been this splinter in the Republican group. how much of it is the conservative, evangelical, Christian right, and how much of it is the fiscal conservatives. And that split is just getting worse and worse and worse, and that's what I think.
You see the split happening inside your party.
Absolutely. And I'll make another – I will make a prediction, Mark. This will go way down on the whole screen after November when most of the Tea Party candidates lose to Democrats. They are not going to win. Forget a Republican majority in the House or the Senate. It's not happening.
You really think not?
Absolutely.
It's absolutely happening, but that's another conversation.
Well, Lester, like go ahead. Then you can come back. The other side of the Republican Party can come back. Lester.
I like to complicate a couple of your panelists have said. First, it's ironic in that if you were to poll, if you asked me to get the data from, if you were to see where each of the people who participated in the march were from, I think what you'd find is that in the vast majority of cases, they live in places that get more in tax dollars from the government than what they spend out, right? So they may very well express attitudinally that they're disappointed with big spending, but they live in places that get more money from government that they spend out, and they wouldn't cut any of that stuff, right? So it's about where they think government is, where they think the spending is going, not necessarily big government per se. Right. That's the first thing. The second thing is that I used to actually believe in the Southern strategy thing, too, historically. But there's been actually a spate of really deep books in history examining how this dynamic we think of as a Southern thing actually isn't a Southern thing at all. And it's really more of a suburban slash rural thing that we see in places like Arizona, as well as in places like Atlanta and in places like Michigan as well. I mean, so the Reagan Democrats. The term Reagan Democrats come from a group of white suburban Detroit voters who blame the Democrats for basically becoming too black for them, right? So race is very well connected here. I think it's connected in people's ideas about what the nation should look like and people's ideas about what the government should and should not spend spend this money on. And those few things combine and they with a demagogue, and they create really, really powerful results.
Well, we have these ideas are all over the place here. I don't know if we can. And I think that is there a place where they connect? Now we have. Is that you, Lester?
Yeah, you know I'm in Baltimore hanging out.
Keep it real, Lester.
Be careful, Lester. They may not know you're a Hopkins professor.
That may make it worse.
They may not care either. But there is a place where what everyone says in some levels of truth connects in all this. I mean, I really think there's a fundamental different view of what America should be, and as much as we don't want it to, most people don't want to admit it, that race, class, historical, economic perspective are all wrapped up inside of one another. They are bound and twisted in a way that it's hard. You just can't pull them apart. And I think that's part of what is going on here. And I think that it's very – because America's changing and on lots of levels. And we're facing economic downturn that may be much deeper than we think, may not come back as fast as we think. We're facing a time when the poverty is growing. We're facing a time when unemployment is like, 17% of Americans either don't have a job, stop looking for work, or are working part-time. Not to count the numbers of people who are making now less than they ever made before. So, I mean, something's happening here, and it's all wrapped up in that. I saw the picture on the front page of the New York Times today. Might not have disturbed everybody, but really disturbed me. And that was a picture of the Border Patrol.
Oh, yeah.
In New York. And everything you talk about when you talk about the people and hear the stories from up there is they're not stopping people that look like you or me. They're stopping people who have brown skin or Asian, and that's who are being questioned. Do you have your IDs? So there's a lot going on here. Well, and it's all part of this mess. Go ahead. Diedrich.
And I was disagreeing that the Glenn Beck rally was just kind of another manifestation of the Tea Party. But I do believe that, you know, it's not a coincidence that the Tea Party arose over the last couple years. And it's not a coincidence that was arose with such force after President Obama was elected. And that, you know, we went from this strong issues around immigration in Arizona, and now all this passion around should an Islamic community center be allowed to be built within 2-3 blocks of the, you know, like all of these things built in, again, to this identity politic piece. One thing I also want to put out is I also wonder if this is a symbol that what was the organized Christian right has really been weakened. And that because I don't see it wasn't the Pat Robertson, per se, or those organizers who really put together this. It was Glenn Beck himself, because they, I don't think, would have allowed.
It wasn't focused on the family.
Yeah, they wouldn't have allowed some random Mormon guy to be the leader of this kind of semi-evangelical movement. And so I think it might even show kind of a reforming of what has been the conservative right, the Christian coalition, and that would be an interesting thing to look at. And for how does that affect Republican politics, since that was such a strong factor in elections.
And this goes back to a point Ann was making earlier.
You're taking us to break here, Brian.
The part that I partially agreed with was the fact that we are seeing a remaking of the Republican Party from the inside. We have seen so many Republican candidates who have been defeated in primary elections by Tea Party-backed candidates. And, you know, it's really remaking the Republican Party. Now, that being said, that's going to help us gain the Republican majority back in both houses of Congress this year. But it's really is a remaking, because there's a lot of voters who may have been turned off, moderate Democrats who would have been turned off by the religious rhetoric from religious conservatives, really buy into the fiscal conservative rhetoric of these Tea Parties.
We have to take a short break. And what I'd like to ask at least the two of you to do, maybe somebody else in this room as well, the day after the general election, you two should come back and talk to us about what happened. How's that?
Gladly.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Folks, you've been very patient. Dave, Ronald and Fran, and Hank, I must say, brother, if it's the same Hank that called last hour, I can't take your call because we got to let other folks get in line here. But if you are a different Hank, then we'll let you on. But they'll let me know that. And Dave, Ronald, Fran, the others who have hung up, call back. We're going to come to your calls. We want to hear what you think. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And before we jump into this, I'm going to say attention, jazz vocalists and musicians. You're invited to a historic photo shoot, A Great Day in Baltimore, Monday, September 13th, 9 a.m. at the War Memorial Plaza in downtown Baltimore. The photo shoot will bring together local and regional musicians in Baltimore's rich musical history, past and present, in support of jazz in the city. Proceeds from the photograph will benefit the UB Blake Cultural Center's jazz workshop programs. For more information, contact Mia Miata at 443-204-1730. That's 443-204-1730. We're talking about the great divide in America, as in some ways people think represented by what happened over the weekend with Glenn Beck's rally. Joining us in studio are Ann McCarthy, Associate Dean of the Johns Hopkins Carey Business School, Brian Griffiths, contributing editor of Red Maryland, Diedrich Mohammed, who is co-founder of the Race and Economic Policy Forum and senior organizer and research associate for the Program on Inequality and the Common Good of the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C., Dr. Lester Spence, professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University, Anthony McCarthy, of course, here in the studio, 410-319-8888. Let's go right to the phones. I think we should let our listeners in. They've been waiting for a long time to have at this. And Dave, you've been waiting the longest, and you're on the air.
Hi, thanks. Can you hear me?
Yes.
You can.
I like it best when you can shed some light on the hypocrisies, the falsities, the contradictions here. I mean, Beck is drawing the mantle of king around himself, and the next day on Fox News, he decries liberation theology, which was Martin Luther King's theology. I mean, Beck is a Mormon. These kind of facts shedding light on the... I mean, let's say there's a silent majority, as Nixon phrased it. That doesn't mean they have to win. Did they win in Vietnam? Did they win in the civil rights movement? You guys should, I think, concentrate on just following the light and the truth and pointing out these contradictions.
Actually, I will say that to me, that was my biggest criticism, not that Glenn Beck was having a march the same day as the March on Washington, but that he went on to say, I mean, after admitting that he had no idea that August 28th was the day that the March on Washington was, then when he's told that, he's like, oh, well, it's divine providence and that we're really going to continue the legacy of the civil rights movement. And then he does shows, you know, shows focused on Martin Luther King was not about social justice. You know, and I wrote an op-ed about this and I suggested, well, why doesn't he look at the 1966 speech, Social Justice in the Emerging Era by Martin Luther King? So that's what really offended me, is to take a man who died for his principles and beliefs, yeah, and then to try to appropriate that for your own social policy, with social policies that are completely opposite of what Dr. King stood for. So to me, that was the offensive thing. It wasn't just that it was, you know, August 28th that it was at the Lincoln Memorial, but that he was obviously twisting around the legacy of Dr. King.
But there were people who, when and again, I have to go back to this idea that Diedrich said before, that a lot of the people in Washington, Mark, were not traditional activists and had not been Republican or right-wing activists for long periods of time. I found it fascinating. They genuinely, the people I talked to here in Maryland, people from Westminster and other places, they genuinely, thank you. They really, really believed that King's legacy of social justice really did apply to their lives today, and that the, making the connection to civil rights and human rights and protecting their jobs and stopping foreclosures and stop spending money we don't have. I watched these folks weave all this together, and they believed it was divine providence that they were going to D.C. on the same day that Dr. King made his I Have a Dream speech. They want an America that is better than the America they see right now, different than the America they see right now. And they believe that's why Dr. King and thousands of people came to Washington on that great day 47 years ago. And he made that I Have a Dream speech. And what touched me about it is that they were sincere in their belief in that.
But I think Beck was sincere, but it's also completely ignorant and false. You know, so mm-hmm. he can be sincere, but I do believe that, you know, Beck, you know, because Beck admits he doesn't really know much about
That's
King,
right.
and you can see, like, he's pulling little facts here, and even he was confronted by Fox News about King was for jobs programs, you're for cutting social programs, and he was like, well, look, if the civil rights movement was more than people of faith coming together who believed in the content of a person's character, not their skin color, then we've been sold a bill of goods. And so I think there's a lot of ignorance coming from Beck, and they just know King's supposed to be good. We're good, so we're all going to...
And King's niece spoke at the rally.
Yes.
Yeah, but...
And he's probably rolling over in his grave. Let me open the phones here again at 410-319-8888. And remind you also that in 1963... the 500,000 people on the Mall also were not activists who had probably never come to a rally before in their lives. Were just regular working American people saying no to segregation. 500,000 people on the Mall in 1963. So that's something, they were not activists either. 410-319-8888. Ronald, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Hi, Ronald. Well, you're on the air.
Okay. I'm trying to be careful the way I say this, but it appears to me, as a Christian, the type of Christianity that Glenn Beck is pushing is not Christianity at all, because Christianity at its core is about reconciliation and redemption, where undertones of his movement basically are mean-spirited. And I think they're heaped up with people that it's not Christianity. It's basically, because I'm a Republican and I pull myself up on my bootstraps, I'm okay with God, and that makes me a Christian. Where that at the core is not Christianity. And a lot of these people, all worked up and basically in a frenzy. They think their country is being robbed or taken away from them, and their whole identity is wrapped up into this America that they think it should be. But in reality, that's not Christianity, but it's idolatry at its core. So basically, this whole theology of his, which is like mixed with red, white, and blue flag and like patriotism equals being right with God, is not Christianity at all. It's idolatry.
It's a misrepresentation based on ignorance that Glenn Beck is not willing to educate himself about. So he ends up, in fact, perpetuating things that are untrue.
And I was also struck, and I know the other folks wanted to join in, but Glenn Beck's constant references to Jesus Christ, which is has no connection with his actual faith at all. I find it fascinating.
Well, that's not true, though. I think that's been a misnomer about the Latter-day Saints.
Well, they believe that Jesus Christ was a prophet, but they don't believe that the tenets of Christianity is that he's the savior of the world. And they do not believe that.
They put both Joseph Smith and the Book of Mormon ahead of the Bible and Jesus Christ, which is why they're considered a cult. That's the definition of a cult.
Wait, see, that's interesting. So what's going on here, though? Which we don't want to get into today, I think. But would be an interesting program to have would be to talk about that, because there are people in the Christian world I've heard say the exact opposite, and I've known a lot of Mormons who would think very differently about who they are.
Oh, of course.
Almost
so. Yeah, but look at how different it is for Mitt Romney to try to get elected compared to his father, George, who was never, ever questioned about the fact he was Mormon. Now it's a big issue because since the 70s, the evangelicals have become more clear about who they accept as true Christians and not as cult members.
And I guess, but I mean, everything was a cult at one point. Judaism was a cult. Christianity was a cult. Everything was a cult in the beginning.
I wouldn't dismiss it as a cult, because a cult could be really any type of smaller religion. Yeah,
there's nothing small about Mormonism. They're huge.
No, it's not smaller. There's a very definite definition. You're talking about splinter groups. I'm talking about cults.
Well, no, I think that anything I can think can be labeled as a cult. But let's not. We're getting,
okay.
I don't want to go off into this. When I come back to where the core of this is, and you want to say something?
The only cult that's probably really at play here is the cult of personality that Beck is building around himself, just to kind of bring it all together. You know, and the fact that. You know, Beck has made himself to be the center of the movement. He is.
Good for him.
And
though.
Always has been. You know, he started out as a disc jockey, you know, and that's, you know, he's living the American dream. He's famous and getting rich. So, you know, good for him.
Let me get another caller in here.
And buyer beware.
And go. And Lester, you're still there?
Yeah, Lester? I'm still here.
All right, we're going to come right back to you on this call. Sharon on the Eastern Shore, then we go to Fran in Maryland. Sharon, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Sharon.
To make a comment, because somebody had said that they didn't think it was a racist. I know they were promoting it as religious, but I know people that personally went to the rally, a lot of white people, that I know for a fact are racist. And I think it was getting brushed under the rug that they're all, you know, for something else. And it's just, you wouldn't believe, I'm a white woman and I have an Obama sticker and an O'Malley sticker on my truck. And it coexists. How many times I've been cussed out by people?
Wow!
You know, just because I'm a liberal white person. So I think that is what is really going on at the Glenn Beck rally, besides the religious movement. That's my only comment, because I know the people, and they are really racist. So that was all I wanted to say.
No, Sharon, glad you called in, and Lester, I know you're not white, but I'd like to answer that question anyway.
Well, you know, the research shows pretty clearly that people who support the Tea Party tend to rank higher in what we call racial resentment than people who aren't members, who either are just simply Republicans and who don't support the Tea Party, or just regular citizens in general. Now, I know the Tea Party people and the Beck people aren't necessarily the same population, but they do overlap. And to that degree, I think the callers absolutely right. There's a great deal of there's at least some what we call old school racism, but there's a great deal of racial resentment. So I talked about the big government stuff earlier. It's not big government. What they think is that government is spending too much money on black people. Right. So if you were to ask them specifically, what is it they're spending too much on? All the stuff that they get, and again, they get more than they spend in taxes. All the stuff that they get would be cool. But the stuff that are associated with black populations and non-white populations, unless you're talking about the prison or increased border patrol, they detest.
I mean, let me put my head back on here after I just hit the ceiling. One of the things that the Tea Party movement is really ticked off about, you know, and the crown jewel of the stimulus package was the TARP program. $787 billion that was flushed down the toilet to save and prop up corporations. I don't exactly think there was that money was going to prop up black government programs. That money was going to corporations run predominantly by white people, and it was money that was flushed down the toilet. You have all these stimulus bills, you have all these bailouts. It's not, it's the accusation that he who opposes government spending solely on the basis of race is just mind-numbingly silly to me.
Well, I do have to say Main Street is angry about the Wall Street bailout, and that is what the Tea Party is tapping into in a big way.
Well, wait a second.
They're pissed.
One of the first claims made when the mortgage stuff busted was you had this population of people who shouldn't have been getting mortgages, right? And those people were explicitly and implicitly labeled as being non-white. I'm not saying that there's other stuff going on. Of course there is other stuff going on. But what I am saying is that racial resentment is a significant factor, and the data shows it.
Well, if you look at the foreclosure data and all the houses, people who were not supposedly, not getting, that were supposedly going to be bailed out, you're talking about predominantly white suburbs and all these McMansions with people
you're
who
right.
were sold a bill.
You're absolutely right. I'm talking about how they were depicted.
Well, okay, but let's move back into the realm of facts here. The fact are these people, it doesn't matter. People who are pissed about the mortgage bailouts don't care what color they are. They care about the fact that money was flushed down the toilet on decisions that were made poorly by individuals.
Mark, I think we have to tell our Republicans that we don't use those words on the air.
Yes, sorry.
We can't use
the
P word.
The P word.
The P word.
That's not right. They very much care about who the beneficiaries are. That's absolutely wrong. They do care about who – there are certain types of spending, certain types of ways that they accept, and certain types of ways that they don't.
Dietrich, then I'm going to go back to the phones. I'm going to get some callers in here.
I mean, I do think, there's a lot of contradictions and tensions in the Tea Party movement, right? Because it's a whole bunch of people coming from a lot of different angles. I remember it was an early country song about they're bailing out Wall Street but shutting Detroit down. And it was a fascinating song because they were critiquing the bailout of Wall Street, but Tea Party was also critiquing bailing out Detroit. But the song and the movement was was resentful of the fact that they weren't supporting the workers in the auto industry. So I think, there's a whole bunch of tensions going on. I do think it was pointed out kind of Main Street was mad at the TARP bailout and found it a type of elitist thing. But I also would agree that, from Reagan till today, there has been this racial resentment of government spending on social welfare that means on black people or illegal immigrants who are unrightly using resources, but play people like when Newt Gingrich was a congressman have some of the highest spending per person. Alaska with Sarah Palin, the independent Alaskans are those who are getting so much more federal expenditures than most other places. So, I think there's truth. There's clearly truth in what Lester is laying out.
Fran, you're on the air.
Hello, Mark.
Hi, Fran. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. I'd just like to make a couple of statements to everyone, but Mark, particularly to you. You wanted to know what's going on and all these things going on. How can we put it all together? I think if you look at it, Mark, as to how the world has evolved up from pre-civil rights, from our forefathers all the way up to now, and what is happening as I see it is the religion and the ideologies, they have always historically and still are clashing. There is a war. People literally are killing one another with peer pressure, with condemnation, damnation, whatever tools they can use, even love, if you do not believe the way they do. People on this planet do kill people because of that. And that is what is happening, and that is what has evolved to this point. I would like to see where religions are no longer used
to condemn women with men condemning women and the religions condemning women, the Catholics condemning women, because they've been pressured into having abortions and their boyfriends are off scot-free. And, you know, the woman, after years, she sees him and he's had a whole lot of kids with somebody else who's Catholic. Well, you can't be around us because she's Catholic. So what do? You shame.
I didn't do that.
You cause her to spiral down and commit suicide. So these are the kinds of things that are going on. And I would love it if men were held accountable finally for what they do and for what women do, and religion no longer plays into these things, because at some point in the human ideology or development, we do become spiritual either during midlife or near the end. And I'm sure, Anthony, you know what I'm talking about.
I do.
Anthony?
Well, I think that the point that she's making about how religion has become such a defining and dividing issue. And I think when we look back at how evangelicals came to power, it wasn't by mistake. I think there was a real conscious determination that we were going to have an America where people were good and right and that people were bad and wrong. And that has become a – and it still is. As much as we like to think that faith does not play a major role, I mean, the issues of abortion and homosexuality and other political social issues do not get the same play nationally that they did at one time in this culture divide. Faith and religion still plays a major defining point for the Republican Party and for evangelicals in this country. And it always will. And we use that right and wrong now to condemn Muslims in this country and to really condemn the evangelical left in this country as being not as religious, not as right, not as close to God as the right in this country. So she's right. It is used as condemnation. It's used as a powerful political tool in this country.
Can I just throw out there that...
Quickly, because I want to get another caller in here.
Yeah, and that, I mean, one thing in defense of religion, you know, I just think that is more about human beings and the way and the things we use, whether it's ideology, secular ideology, or theology. I don't think by... I think it's kind of a misnomer to blame it upon religion. It's when communities are in conflict and we're trying to figure out who's going to be considered the winner, who's going to be considered the right. You can do that with secular ideology just as well as you can do it with theology.
And I'll just say that at least religiously or religious root-wise, this is probably one of the most diverse panels you'll find anywhere.
It's wonderful.
On the radio. 410-319-8888. Ben, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Well, Ben.
Good. I real quick.
Yeah, because we don't have much time, so it has to be quick.
Okay, I had no life, so I went to both rallies on Saturday.
Yes, sir. I was there, too.
And let me tell you this real quick. I believe Glenn Beck is a genius, and I'm going to tell you why. A wickedly genius. I think the events leading up to this event he had Saturday, he baited Al Sharpton and all the quote-unquote black civil rights, self-appointed black civil rights leaders into really believing that he was going to steal all of this racial hatred and what have you at this particular event. And he hijacked Martin Luther King's this particular day. He picked that particular day to do it. And he ended up having a docile event. I was in the crowd. The crowd was very docile, very peaceful. And when I went over to Dunbar High School, and I got to be honest, I was very disappointed at some of the hatred and vile things that were said about white folks coming from my people, coming from black people. I mean, it was being said in the audience and then some of the speakers, and they came across looking to the most gullible of those who were looking at both and trying to decide which direction they wanted to go in this whole scheme of things. They came across looking very angry and, you know, very hateful versus a person who just, and while Beck came across as this person who wanted to unite the whole country, on the peace and harmony, you know. So it was very, I mean, it was a very sad day for this country, you know, because you got a news, a company like Fox, who now is creating the news that they report. And that's very dangerous, you know. But,
Ben, your analysis is really fascinating. I wish we had gotten you on the earlier, because it's been a great kind of just to fall off on the entire discussion, because Dietrich, you were there.
Yeah, I had a very different experience. I never heard of anyone from this podium saying anything anti-white, and I did notice during the march. I mean, again, I wasn't there the whole time. I was going back and forth, but during the march, I found it much more celebratory. I think people are intimidated oftentimes when you have 10,000 black people together. That can be much more scary than 100,000 white people, and maybe that was intimidating.
Yeah, it depends who you are, though.
But we tend to be much more emotional.
Yeah, but I had a different perspective on that. But I do think too. I think it was a win for Glenn Beck on the national scene, no doubt. And I think it was a win for Reverend Sharpton because I think it gave him space to really kind of be the leader that is saying this is what the King legacy is about today, and it gave him a lot of national press that he wouldn't have had otherwise. So I think it was a win for both figures.
And we know that Al Sharpton loves to find his press.
but I do want to say what's fascinating is without Reverend Sharpton, I don't know who else would have organized that. And I think it was important that there was some type of civil rights response, some type of people saying we're going to reclaim the dream. And it's sad to me, and I was saying this earlier, progressive forces should have been, since 2009 at least, with this massive unemployment, having marches on Washington for jobs. And I don't know what's going on with the progressive community. I don't know what's going on with the progressive white community, that they weren't involved with this reclaim the dream.
We only have 30 seconds left. Lester, you've got 15 seconds.
I actually disagree with that. One, real quick, Sharpton's march was planned before Beck's, so that's not a response. But two is, I actually don't think we should be doing marches anymore. I don't think they work. So to that extent, what Sharpton and Beck did, in
fairness, 10 seconds?
Yeah.
No. I'm talking about my other guest here.
Oh, no, I'm looking forward to after Election Day when my prediction comes true.
The most dangerous place in the world between Al Sharpton and a camera. That's really all I got.
That's a used line.
I didn't say it was original. That's all I got, man.
Well, we can do more on Al Sharpton, but I'll have to reserve that for another time. Folks, I want to thank all of you for being with us. Dr. Lester Spence, Dedrick Muhammad, Brian Griffiths, and McCarthy. We look forward to having you back. And thank you all for calling in, writing in, and making this exciting. And thank you, Anthony McCarthy, for co-hosting
great
as usual.
Great being here, Mark.
And it was a great 2 hours, despite what some people think. Mark's Time Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines, where you can get your weekly fix of arts and culture, food and drink, home and design, style and shopping, and green and sustainable products, topics. Up-to-date information can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at urbaniteBaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Christina Arison and Justin Levy. We're engineered by Brian Boone, but that's not Brian Boone over there today. Is that? Who is that? It's Zachary Coleman. And our interns are Richard Good and Daniel Gillespie. Our theme music by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, and find out more information about the topics we have discussed, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner with Anthony McCarthy. Take care.